Let's turn our Bibles this morning to the book of Ruth instead of 1 Peter. We're doing a special break here for Mother's Day weekend on the book of Ruth. Wonderful, remarkable story, love story of romanticism. How God brings two people together. We love to hear those kinds of stories, don't we? I want to mention to the men that this Wednesday morning is another men's breakfast. We've had a good turnout of men who have been coming to pray weekly, and Kelly Starnes, formerly a professional golfer in our congregation, is going to be giving his testimony. He's been here at Wayside a long time, and then they have prayer, but they'll have a breakfast to precede that. It's 6:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, so if you men feel like maybe some of the women may have felt earlier this morning, that you're a little bit isolated, disconnected with other men in your life, which is a tendency of all men to sort of isolate and not build strong, godly relationships. And I would encourage you to take note of that. If you refuse to get involved, it's not because we do not have the ministry available to you, and we want you to understand that. So be sure and come Wednesday morning, get to know some other men. Before we stand for the reading of Scripture this morning, I would really like to see us honor the ladies who are 70 and over. If you are 70 and over, would you stand? And then just remain standing, and we're going to find out who the oldest lady is here this morning. 70 and over, we congratulate you. Now, remain standing if you're in this category. You're 80 and over. Okay? All right, 80 and over. We still have a big number. Previous two services, I've gotten myself in trouble at this point. We'll see how it works. 85 and over. If you are 85 or over, we would like to have you in this service. Now I want you to remain standing just for a moment, Mrs. Dawson. The oldest lady last night was 87. Early service this morning was 91. And I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but if you'd like to tell us, we will listen. 90. Lord bless you. We honor you, and we only hope that we are as spry and as sharp at age 90, should God allow us to become that age. We appreciate you. Okay, let's take our Bibles, the book of Ruth, and let's turn to the opening chapter, and I would like to read just the opening verses to this to give you a little bit of the setting. All of us are going to be able to identify this morning with Ruth before we leave, because all of us face similar circumstances in our lives. The book of Ruth begins on a very tragic note, but it ends on a triumphant note, a note of joy, which I think is so representative, ultimately, of all of our lives. We're going to experience tragedy in this life. We're going to experience things that we cannot explain, we don't understand, they're incomprehensible, they don't seem to make any sense. That's the way it was in the opening verses of the book of Ruth. Let's stand together as we read. Ruth, by the way, follows Joshua and Judges, if you're still looking for it. Joshua, Judges, and then Ruth, just a small book of four chapters in the Old Testament. Now listen to the setting of this story. This gives you a feel immediately for what this book is about. Verse 1, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. So immediately we're made aware of the fact it was in the time of the judges. We'll say more about that in a moment. That there was a famine in the land. First unfortunate thing that happens to this family. There was a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, which is on the other side of the Jordan River, across from the Dead Sea, down in modern-day Jordan. He and his wife and two sons. So notice, they started out one happy family, a wife, two sons. Verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went out to the country of Moab, and they remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, she was left as a widow, but she had two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelt there about 10 years until tragedy strikes again in verse 5. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Tragic, tragic. Father, as we read the opening verses to this book, we're reminded that life isn't always what we would like for it to be. Many of us come this morning with broken lives, broken homes. We have experienced it in our own personal families. Husbands or wives or maybe parents taking their own lives out of desperation. Others who are tragically taken by some accident, such as we saw here last night with Jan Haney and her son who was so suddenly killed. Others that are stricken with cancer whose lives are terminal. Some that have been waylaid by other kinds of disasters in their lives. And Lord, we just confess we don't understand so much of the suffering in our world, other than the fact it's because of sin that we see all of this suffering around us. Certainly not what you intended for it to be in the beginning. But Father, we thank you that this is the worst and the best is yet to come. We thank you that the book of Ruth teaches us that, that you are the sovereign God who is over our lives and that nothing just happens by chance. That you order the very steps of our lives day in and day out. You allow us to experience bitter, harsh, difficult things, the loss of family members, a wife, a husband, a child, parent, people we love. I pray that you'll bring some comfort to us this morning on this Mother's Day when many of us would reflect about our own mothers and realize, as in my case, that I haven't seen my mother for 35 years. And yet I rejoice in the fact that I know she is in your presence and I will see her again. Help us to value the relationships that we have while we are here, but also to hold them lightly, knowing that they are so temporary. So I trust that you'll be glorified in this time this morning. May you speak to us, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. We cannot be sure who wrote the book of Ruth. Speculations have been numerous. But we do know when the book of Ruth was written. It was written, as verse 1 tells us, in the time of the judges. Now, if you remember the time of the judges, when we went through the book of Judges a year or two ago, it was a time when they were living in a period of time when degeneracy was commonplace, when the country was without a real leader. They were up and down. There was moral corruption, even to the point that some of the deaths that we read about later on in the book of Judges were just things that are unspeakable in public circles. It was a time of moral chaos, much like in our own country. And we listen to the news and we hear all of these things and we see what's happening in our own lives, and the temptation is to say that maybe God really isn't all that interested in us, or he doesn't care, or he certainly is not that involved in my life and overseeing particularly the details of my life. But what Ruth wants us to see is that even in the midst of all of this degeneracy and moral chaos, that God is still at work, and it gives us hope for this present hour today. I love the book of Ruth as I've studied it over the last several weeks, because it's a love story, and everybody, I think, loves a love story. We like to hear how people meet. I love the story about the young woman who was on a cruise, and she kept looking at this attractive young man not too far from her, and he noticed her eyes had been upon him, and finally he walks over to the young lady and says, "Ma'am," he says, "can I help you? Is there something wrong? Why are you looking at me like this?" And he said, the young woman said, "Well, I cannot help but think of how much you remind me of my first husband." And he says, "Well, ma'am, how many times have you been married?" And she said, "Oh, I haven't been yet." That's a great line that some of you gals may want to use at some point. Judges was the book of failure. Judges opened on a high note, ended on a low note. Ruth opens on a low note, ends on a high note. That's a great ending to the story. God is at work in the book of Ruth, and you see that. You can't miss that as you read these four chapters. I encourage you, when you leave today at some point early in the week, just read the story after we've gone through it this morning and see how it just sort of jumps out at you that God is at work in even the little intricate details of our lives. He has not abandoned His people even in the midst of famine and death and sorrow, such as we have in the case of this family. I sometimes think of that when I get frustrated out in traffic, and especially traffic here in San Antonio, and it's coming closer and closer to us here on 410. They tell us the 410 is going to be under construction for probably the next 10 years, well into the time of the tribulation period, perhaps. The men are still going to be working out here, and we're going to see these slow men working signs. And sometimes we want to take that comma and take it out of there, you know, slow, men working. Remember, we had a fellow in our first church up in Michigan who worked for the State Highway Department, and he said, you know, when somebody dies on the job out on the highways working, he said, we have to wait till quitting time to find out who it was. You might have to think about that one for a little bit, but you'll get it. That happened at the earlier two services. Sometimes we feel that in the midst of our circumstances, so don't we? God, where are you? What are you doing? Why are you allowing all of this tragedy to come into my life? When I came in this morning, number one, I've heard of extended family members of our congregation this week that have shot and killed themselves. We've had tragic accidents such as we've already mentioned. I mean, I look at my own life and I think that I had a mother who died 35 years ago of cancer, and my father went to be with the Lord 20 years ago in 1978, and my brother shot himself, or rather took his life back in 1988. And I look at my life, and I look at the lives of so many of you, extended family members. You say, oh, my goodness, my life and my extended family, it's just been tragic what's happened to us. This morning we had a doctor down here whose wife didn't come this morning because they had a daughter that was killed, very suddenly taken from them 3 years ago, and it's still a difficult thing for her to be present on Mother's Day. And some of you are experiencing the pain of that. And what I want to do is give you some hope in the midst of all of this morning. God has His reasons for allowing things to move so slowly, yet He is at work. And God, you see, is not just looking in the here and now as we do, as we look at things and we look at life in the here and now. He's looking down through the corridors of time right on into eternity, and He has the reasons for allowing the things that come into our lives that do. He has a reason for all of that. And Ruth sort of stands out like a beacon in the dark time of Judges. She was willing to wait for God to work, and work God did, as we will see when we get to the last chapter. The story concerns a family. Tragic things happen to this family, as we read in the opening verses of chapter 1. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. Such a beautiful name. And it means literally a delightful one, or my delight, or pleasant one. And she was indeed a delight. She wins the award for the best supporting actress in the book of Ruth. She had two sons. Now, her two sons, by the way, were named Mahlon, which in Hebrew means sickly. I don't know why you would name a son sickly, but in that day you sort of gave names to sons or daughters as certain traits or whatever came out to you. And then the other son really wasn't much better. His name was Chilion, and in Hebrew it means failing. And somehow you get the idea that these two young fellows were not long for this world, don't you? They go to the land with their parents, the land of Moab, because of the famine. And it's while they are there that these two young men, the father dies, two young men meet two women by the name of Orpah and Ruth. Ruth means, by the way, female companion. It's a beautiful name. Many of you are named Ruth. We have an elder statesman in our congregation by the name of Everett DeWolf, and he has a wife named Ruth. Oh, I didn't do this during the earlier two services. Excuse me a minute. His wife is named Ruth, and he often tells with affection how they met. And he's got a little ditty that goes like this. He said, "I rode Ruth in my cycle car. She sat beside of me. I hit a bump at 65 and rode on ruthlessly." Well, the family appeared to be doing well for about 10 years, and all of a sudden, tragedy strikes. Sons, we're not given any details, they just simply die. Naomi outlived both her husband as well as her two sons. She evidently, being a Jew, was obviously from Israel. She knew that somehow God was in the midst of all of this, but it was a very bitter experience for her, and she could have become a very bitter woman because of her loneliness. But God had protected her and given her a wonderful female companion in this delightful Moabitess woman by the name of Ruth. Evidently, Naomi was able to see that and understand even the most difficult moments in life, the tragedies of her life, that it was not all hopeless and she was not all helpless, because God somehow was there in the background and still in control, and He was up to something. And that's the feeling behind this book. I want us to notice several things about Ruth this morning. You have them in your outline, but let me just call your attention to them, because I think that Ruth represents what every woman here today ought to want to be. And not just every woman, but every man. Because the virtues or the characteristics of this woman, Ruth, are virtues or characteristics that we would all do well to have and emulate. And the first one, notice, is she had a heart of loyalty, and it's reflected in her relationship with her mother-in-law, Naomi. Look at verse 6. "Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that's Naomi, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited His people by giving them bread." The famine was now over in the land of Israel. And it was okay now to go back, because there was a plentiful harvest. It was right in the midst of the barley season harvest. And therefore, it was a good time for Ruth to go back and reestablish her relationships with her extended family members, because she no longer had a husband and she no longer had her two sons. And she was just going to be content to let her two daughters-in-law, the Moabites, remain there in the land of Moab while she went back to her own land, the land of Israel. Orpah decides that she will turn back and go back to her people, because Ruth says, look down in verse 14, she mentions that they had already served their duty. They had been faithful in their commitment until death, taking care of their husbands and so forth. And now they no longer had any obligation to her, and Naomi wanted them to know that they were now free to go back to their people. Orpah decides to go back. She kisses her and goes back. Verse 15, but notice what happens with Ruth. End of verse 14, but Ruth clung to her. And Naomi said to her, "Look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods." And those would have been the gods, for example, the chief god of the Moabites at that time was the god of Chemosh. And so she says, "You can go back to your people, you can go back to your gods." And she said, "This is what your sister-in-law has done. And so return," she says at the end of verse 15, "after your sister-in-law." But notice the response of Ruth, and it's classic. You're going to hear it sung in a few moments at the end of the service. It's used in so many of the weddings. Ruth was not content to allow her mother-in-law to go on ruthlessly. She was going to go with her. Look at verse 16, but Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you, for wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. And your people shall be my people, and your God shall be my God, and where you die, I will die, and where you're buried, I will be buried. And the Lord do also to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you from me." No wonder this is a response that is so well known and probably memorized by many of you, and was even used in perhaps a number of your weddings, because it represents a till death kind of commitment in relationships. A kind of commitment that is almost unheard of today. her words have tremendous implications for us. And I just want to address that for a moment. Earlier this weekend, I was out getting a Mother's Day card for Connie, not because she's my mother, but because she's been a great woman and a great mother to our two daughters. And as I was buying that card, the clerk at the checkout counter, we got to talking, and I said, well, I've been married to the same woman for 36 years. Not taking pride in that, but just making a statement. And she looked at me in disbelief. She said, 36 years? You've been married to the same woman? She said, that's amazing. And I thought about that as I left that place, and I thought, why should that be amazing? I mean, every one of us stand there before the judge or before the pastor and before all of the people who are assembled, the family and the witnesses, and we say, till death do us part. And we make that kind of a commitment. How is it then that we can be so easy about just dissolving that commitment in our country today? Well, Ruth was one who was willing to make this lifelong commitment to taking care of her mother-in-law, Naomi. She was going to follow after Naomi and provide for her. She was determined. She would not take no for an answer. She was going anyway. And so finally, as the story allows us to see, Ruth is allowed to go on with Naomi. Naomi simply could not refuse her. She had a heart of loyalty. First thing we notice about her. Secondly, you will notice that Ruth had a heart of humility. Now, this is where I think it really gets personal with us. Not only was she one who was going to keep her vows and fulfill her obligations, but she was also one who had a heart of humility. And they end up in Bethlehem. Notice in verse 22, say, Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now, they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. I want you to notice several things here that you may not see in just casually reading the book, and that is that God is even in control of the timing of the things that happen in our lives. He's never too slow. He's never too quick. He is always right on time when it comes to ordering our lives. It's at the beginning of the barley harvest because God knew this was the time that Boaz would be available and God could bring the two of these people, lovely people, together. And so they end up in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Ruth was just simply willing to go out and work in the fields and serve as a common laborer. There was no task that was too demeaning for her. However, she had a humble heart and she was willing to humble herself and wait for God to exalt her at the proper time. And she becomes noticed by the man whose name was Boaz. Now look at verse 1 of chapter 2. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth. Literally in the Hebrew, it's El Gibor. And it can be translated many different ways. It may be translated as man of great influence, a man of great power, a man of great wealth. And perhaps in this case, it was all three. He was also a man of moral integrity. He was a man of virtue. He kind of had everything going for him. He was a man of God, and we know that because his name literally means, God is my strength. And so he was depending upon God. He was walking with God all of his life. And he had this incredible wealth, this powerful influence. He really wasn't a bad choice for a son-in-law at all. And Naomi knew that. This was to be God's choice for Ruth. But how would she find him? How would he discover her? How would she be noticed by him? Let me just say to you young people here today particularly, and those of you that are single and in those years of your life where you'd really like to find the right life partner, don't manipulate the hand of God. Just don't do it. Don't try to make things happen. If you're just simply the man of God or the woman of God that God wants you to be, I believe at the right time and in the proper place, He is going to bring that young man or that young woman into your life that He wants you to have. And whenever we begin to try to manipulate the hand of God and move out, we always get ourselves into deeper problems. I love the phrase, and I've used it before, the old bachelor who all of his life never got married. And somebody said, why have you never gotten married? And he said, I would rather go through life wanting something I don't have than having something I don't want. Because oftentimes it's easier to get something you don't have than to get rid of the something you do have. So there's a lot of wisdom in that. Now notice, according to verse 2 and 3, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, verse 2 of chapter 2, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And notice in verse 3, it just happened, she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. You realize nothing just happens in your life. That's the way the writer put it. It just happened. But you see God behind all of this, orchestrating it, making it possible. Her humility just simply allowed God to direct her course. She was like a sailboat that had the sails set. And now God can guide the sails. He can guide the boat wherever he wants it to go. And that was Ruth. She just had a humble heart that was available to God. And God's going to do the same for us today. You don't have to manipulate the hand of God and try to make things happen. He will make it happen in his own timing. It was God, you see, who brought the bride for Isaac into his life in Genesis chapter 25. He always does it that way. Abraham's servant was led directly to the beautiful woman, Rebekah, and he responds to her in Genesis 25 and verse 27, where he says, "As for me, being in the way, the Lord led me. The Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." And you go back here to verses 5 and 6, and you can see how the Lord is in all of this. Look at verse 5 of chapter 2. "Then Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this?" I mean, Boaz happened to notice her. What do you think he noticed about her? Well, he certainly noticed there was something different about her. He was probably attracted to her physically. He maybe was attracted to her emotionally, spiritually, in some way that God gave him a special affection for this young woman, this young Moabitess woman. And notice the response in verse 6. "So the servant said, who was in charge of the reapers, answered and said, it's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." Verse 7. "And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came as and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little bit in the house." Now the law of the harvest in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 19, was that whenever you went out and you harvested your field, whatever you happened to have fall behind you, you weren't to go back and pick it up. In other words, you're just simply to take that and leave it go and leave it for the fatherless and the widows and the unfortunate. And they could come along and therefore they could have their fill as well from the harvest that God had granted. It was just simply a way in which God was being gracious to all of his people. But notice that Boaz notices Ruth. That's the important thing here. He notices her in the midst of all of the other servant girls who were out there serving. He took special notice of Ruth. Remember in your own life as a married man or a married woman how you took special notice of that special person in your life? I mentioned that Connie was here at the earlier service. But when I met Connie 38 years ago, she was in our house. I actually met her in our house with a bunch of other teenagers. And first time I'd ever laid eyes on her. And I thought there was something quite attractive about that gal. And I remember when her mother came over to pick her up. She was 16 years of age. And her mother came over to pick her up in the car. And I walked her out on the porch. And later on I heard that her mother said, "Who is that young man that brought you out on the porch?" She said, "Oh, that's the fella. He lives here. His parents live here. This is his house." And she said, her mother said something like, "Well, I think he's attracted to you." And Connie said, "Oh, no, he's not attracted to me. He's interested in my friend Carolyn." Her mom said, "Oh, I wouldn't be too sure about that." Mothers have that special discernment, you see. Story about the man who owned some sheep, wanted to take them over a river that was frozen over. The woman who owned the river said, "No, you cannot take your sheep over my river." And so the man married her. And that's how he pulled the wool over her ice. I was warned not to share that at the late service, but I'm so desperate. Please send me some new material. I need it. That's not what happened here. That's not what happened here. Notice, God made sure that Boaz protected her while she was gleaning. Look at verse 9 of chapter 2. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from the young men which they have drawn. And she fell on her face, bowed to the ground, and said to him, Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? She recognizes the hand of God in all of this, felt unworthy. She had a heart of humility. He had heard all about her loyalty to Naomi in verse 11. He made sure that she had plenty to eat in verse 14, plenty of grain to take back to her mother-in-law in verses 17 and following. And Naomi begins to sense that God is doing something. Now I want you to notice this when you get to verse 20. When her daughter-in-law brings in this food and shares with her what had happened out in the field that day and how Boaz had taken notice of her, look in verse 20. Naomi says, Blessed be the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. In the midst of her tragic life, she is now seeing that God has been at work all along. And Naomi said to her, This man is a relative of ours, one of our close relatives. And that moves us into chapter 3, where the story even gets more exciting. And we see in chapter 3 that Naomi has a heart of teachability. Not only one of loyalty, one of humility, but one of teachability. Look in chapter 3, she's willing to listen to advice. Chapter 3 and verse 1. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young woman you were with, is he not the relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, go down to the threshing floor. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies. You shall go in, uncover his feet, lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. Now everything about this is morally pure. Don't read anything into this that's not there. The tendency is to do that in our day, you know, to take something that's beautiful and pure and make it something that's perverse and unholy. That's not what's happening here. What Naomi is telling her daughter-in-law is, Ruth, the proper time has come now for you to meet this man, and we need to get on with this relationship and see whether or not Boaz is going to be our nearest kinsman redeemer. So she says, you take a good bath, and you put on your best perfumes, and you put on your nicest clothes, and you go down to the threshing floor tonight, and here's what you are to do. And the reason for this was because it was a custom in that day, the uncovering of the feet here that would take place was a ceremonial act that was completely proper. And some believe that it would take place at night in order that Boaz had the opportunity to reject the proposal without the whole town knowing about it. But notice in verse 5, Ruth says to her, All that you say to me, I will do. All that you say to me, I will do. Young people, I want to say to you this morning this. This is the kind of attitude you need to have towards your parents. This is the proper attitude that you need to have towards those who love you, towards the authorities that God has brought into your life. It will keep you from a lot of trouble later on. All that you say, Dad, I will do. All that you say, Mom, I will do. She was willing to be taught. She had a heart that was humble and a heart that was teachable. And she was not about to run ahead of God or run ahead of her parent here. In this case, her mother-in-law, Ruth. She respected what her mother-in-law had to say. And I say this to you, Ruth is being the matchmaker here, but don't young people bring some man into your life or some man into the life of your parents, introduce them to him and say, Mom and Dad, we're going to get married. It doesn't work that way. Or to bring a young woman up to your parents and say, Dad, this is a woman I'm going to marry. When your dad and mom don't even know anything about her, you see, your dad and mom know you best, and they're going to be able to discern the best about that man or that woman that God wants you to be married to for the rest of your life. Because you're not just having a wedding, you're not just having a marriage, you are having a relationship between two people and two people's families. So it's important that you involve them in the process, and that's what Ruth was doing in this context, as she was involving her mother-in-law, Ruth, in the context and just simply leaving all of it up to God. And mothers tend to be very discerning when it comes to characters. Naomi knew that Boaz could be trusted, and Naomi also knew that Ruth could be trusted. She knew what kind of virtuous woman Ruth was. And by the way, the same word that was used of Boaz back in chapter 2 and verse 1, referring to his great wealth or El Gabor, it's also the same word that is used here in verse 11 of Ruth. Look at verse 11 of chapter 3. "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request. For all of the people of my town know that you are what? A virtuous woman. A woman who could be trusted." And so Naomi encourages this to take place on this particular night in order that the process might be completed. Well, notice what happens here. One more detail must be cleared out of the way. We jump down to verse 12. Verse 12. "Now it's true," Boaz is saying to Ruth, "I am a close relative. However, there's one closer than I." So he said, "Stay this night. In the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." In other words, he's saying, "Ruth, trust me here. Just rest at my feet." And it's a beautiful picture of every one of us coming to that relationship with Jesus Christ where we simply rest at His feet. And we say, "I'm leaving it all up to You. I'm just trusting You for the process here and the end result." And that's what Ruth was doing with this man, Boaz. So notice, when the morning came, here's what happens. Verse 4, chapter 4, verse 1, "Boaz went up to the gate." And here's where we see Ruth now has a heart of nobility. She goes from loyalty to humility to teachability to finally nobility. It's time now for God to exalt Ruth as He always does when we humble ourselves before Him. Ruth has a heart of nobility. In verse 2, Boaz took his closest relative to Ruth. And in verse 2, he took the 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. And then he said to the close relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold a piece of land which belonged to her brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one else to redeem it. I am next of kin after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Now here was the setting. It was commonplace in that day for the gate to serve as sort of modern-day city hall. And if a man wanted to transact business, such as buy or redeem or sell property, then what he would do is he would get some of the elders of that city, he'd bring them together there at the city gate, and that's where they would negotiate, and they would have the witnesses for this. And so he is now offered, in the presence of these 10 men, the nearest relative is being offered the land rights to Elimelech's property, and that would have been his brother. Elimelech's brother, who was being offered the property. But there was one catch. The brother says, "Yes, I will redeem it." But what he didn't realize at that time was if he bought the land, redeemed the land, he also had to take Ruth with the property. And he would have to raise up heirs in his brother's name, which would endanger his own inheritance as it was passed down to his children. We have a lot of that today, don't we? People that don't want to get married simply because they're trying to protect their inheritance to their children. And it was happening in that day. And so all at once when the man realizes there's this catch that Ruth must go with the property, then he refuses to do it. And so therefore Boaz became the next Goel, nearest kinsman redeemer, and is so much a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. The relationship is completed. Let's jump down to verse 13 as we bring all this to a conclusion. "Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. When he went into her, they had sexual relationships together. The Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son." But not just any son. "Then the woman said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative. May his name be famous in Israel.'" That's what we want this son to be. Verse 15, "And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons has borne him." You get the feeling here that Naomi now all at once has come full circle from a very bitter life in the opening verses of chapter 1 to where she is now at that point where she is old and she is a fulfilled woman. that God has more than compensated her for the loss of a husband and the loss of two sons. And notice in verse 16, Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, and became as a nurse to him. Verse 17, and the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David, so that he becomes the grandfather of David, and ultimately in the lineage, the genealogy of King Jesus, the Redeemer of all of Israel and all of the world. So that the book begins in sorrow, it ends in joy. Begins with some funerals, it ends with a wedding. It's a picture of life for every believer that the best is yet to come. Can you believe that this morning? The best is yet to come. It isn't over till it's over. And when it's over, we enter into that eternal state of blessedness with Jesus Christ, as like Ruth with Boaz, we're sitting at His feet and we are resting in Him. And throughout the book, you sort of get this feeling, the artless simplicity of all of it, that runs the note that God is supreme and He's working behind the scenes in all of life's circumstances, and He's doing something extra special for each and every one of us. We're going to see that when we get to eternity. God never forsakes His people. Linda Sledge, an author, tells about a time in her childhood when she will never forget. She was perhaps a child of 4 or 5 years of age. She was out in Hawaii with her parents, and she was there playing along the coastline, just a little bit out into the water, when all at once she began to sense that she was losing control of her position. And that the undertow, the undercurrent from the ocean was coming in and sort of knocking her off of her feet. And she began to feel that she was being pulled out away, further and further from away from her parents and away from the coastline. And another wave struck and she had no footing. And finally she began to cry out to her parents. And all she could see was that vast ocean out there. And she was all alone and about to be swept out into it and thinking she was doomed. And just then she felt two strong arms that just sort of reached out and caught a hold of her from behind by her shoulders and pulled her to safety, as it was her father. And her father said, "Don't be afraid, honey. I've been watching you all the time." I think that's what God is saying in this book to each one of us. Don't be afraid. I've been watching you all the time. He overrules in the affairs of ordinary men and women as He is continually going about working out His purposes for His people. One final note on this, and that is that I think in typology, this is a beautiful picture here of what happens with the nation of Israel. They are driven out of their own land. And then a remnant return, as Naomi and Ruth return after the famine was over in the time of harvest. And this picture is the very end of the age. And the remnant will return to the land. And King Jesus, as typified by Boaz, is going to reveal Himself to His people. And they're going to sit at His feet. And then they're going to enter into that eternal state of blessedness. All of it has beautiful typology woven into it. It shows us that God has not given up on His creation. That He is at work. And He's using the most difficult, the most harsh, the most hard, the most incomprehensible circumstances in life to bring this to pass. And we can rest in that, that God is in control. Now I want us to bow our heads together in prayer. I venture to say there's probably some of you this morning that God is working in your lives. You have things that are happening in your life that you can't explain, and the temptation is to just sort of say, "God, You don't care about me." But He does. And this morning, He just wants to bring you, as He did Ruth, to that moment of just resting and trusting. It's out of your hands, but it's very much in His control. It may be that you're a teenager here this morning, and you realize that you've been fighting against your parents. Instead of saying, "As You have told me, I will do," you're doing just the opposite. God cannot bless you. And I remind you of that this morning. You need to come back and just become teachable and humble there, under the authority of your parents. And maybe you need to go to them when the service is over and say, "Dad, Mom, I've not listened to you. And I ask your forgiveness," and get your life straightened around with them and square with God. For some of you, you might be on the verge of divorcing that spouse and not fulfilling that commitment. Your heart is not one of loyalty. Your word really doesn't mean anything. And God is saying something to you this morning that you need to become one who is committed. Not only in your relationship with God, but if you're committed in that relationship with God, you're going to also be committed in the relationships around you that God brings into your life. And so I encourage you to just make that right with Him this morning. You could be...